Wondery Plus subscribers can binge all 8 episodes of Operator ad-free. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
A quick warning that this series contains adult language and content, including some frank discussions of sex.
I got a call about 2 o'clock in the morning from one of the male supervisors, and he says there are a bunch of men with guns on the property, and we don't know what to do.
Victoria had been working at American Telnet for several years. She'd seen her share of emergencies, so she didn't freak out right away.
And I said, okay, are they police? He says, I really don't know. They're plain clothes. I said, plain clothes suits? Or, and he goes, no, jeans. He goes, they said they were police, but they're refusing to show a badge.
Victoria's job was managing a big team of phone operators, all crammed into a nondescript warehouse in North Miami Beach. Hundreds of men and women, mostly women, sat in cubicles, headsets on, fielding call after call, day and night. And now, men with guns, claiming to be the police, were trying to get into the warehouse.
We had electronic door access codes. Every agent, every operator, had their own code.
The men didn't have access, and they weren't showing a search warrant. Without a warrant, the operators weren't letting them in. After a while, they stopped knocking. But when an operator opened the door to leave,
a middle-aged agent was at the door, and once she got the door open, they pushed her on the ground, and the team ran over her back.
The men had been waiting in the bushes.
And they fanned out, and they were looking in files, they were looking for something. And as quick as they were in, they swooped through, they dug around, and they ran out.
Victoria was furious. As a supervisor at ATN, she had seen plenty of surprising things. And sure, the company may have skirted right up against a few federal regulations, but the service it provided wasn't against the law. Because the company where Victoria worked, American Telnet, a company with the blandest of names, was actually the largest phone sex operation in the United States.
Love to party? Call Jake by phone now.
What turns women on will turn you on.
No rejections, no turndowns. Over men only.
The morning after the raid, Victoria wanted answers. She went to ATN's head of technology, Michael Self. Not much happened at ATN without Michael Self knowing about it. As it turned out, it was the local police, and whatever they were looking for, they'd left empty-handed.
You know, the first story was when we called City Hall, called the cop shop the next morning, they said it never happened.
Armed men had invaded their offices, physically assaulting one of their employees, and the police were saying it never happened. And the ATN executives didn't seem to care because the police hadn't found anything. But Victoria cared. What about the operators?
They are me by extension. And I do feel that way.
When something like the police raid happened and the owners did nothing, Victoria had to wonder, how much did the company really care about her and the workers she looked out for?
My understanding is when those folks flex, things get done. And yeah, they could have done that. People like to mention how busy they were. Yeah, me too. I wish they would have taken it one step further and protected the golden goose instead of just the gold.
Because at the end of the day, ATN was a business, a really big business.
It was a wild time.
And there's these girls on the stage doing a live sex show.
It was like, you know, ecstasy, cocaine, champagne, millionaires.
At the pinnacle, we were doing $1.1, $1.2 million on a Friday night or a Saturday night.
This man, Mike Pardes, he controls all of the phone sex in the country.
Fancy cars, fancy clothes, celebrities, models, the porn industry.
Until it all came crashing down.
That wasn't a company, it wasn't a job. It was American Telnet.
The ending sucked. The beginnings were much more fun.
Your call cannot be completed as dialed.
If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
From Topic Studios and Wondery, I'm Tina Horn, and this is Operator.
Wanna talk live to beautiful, sensuous girls?
When I was growing up in the 90s, I saw these kinds of ads all the time. They were flickering on late-night cable channels and printed in the backs of weekly newspapers. Like most kids, I was intensely curious about sex. I was obsessed with stories about lust and images of sweaty, naked bodies. Porn, in other words. But these ads seemed like they were offering something even more than porn. These ads promised I could interact with a real live fantasy woman, that she was really waiting in pink lipstick and glittery earrings in like a horny bubble bath, that she wanted to talk dirty to me. That thought lit up my queer little heart. So I hatched a plan to call one of those lines. I figured out the perfect spot, the payphone at my neighborhood pool. The phone was in a little wooden booth just far enough away from the grown-ups and their white plastic lounge chairs. So, one blazing California summer day, I got to the pool, and I'd brought my notebook that I had filled with phone numbers scrawled in gel pen. I whispered to my friends, "Meet me by the payphone." So it was me and a bunch of other teenagers huddled around the receiver. They watched closely as I dialed my first choice, 1-900-HOTCUMM. And then...
our one-of-a-kind options will leave you spent. For hot young co-eds who are ready to learn how to please you, press 1 for only $2.99 per minute.
This was the first time I had heard anybody talk like this. Directly into my ear. I clutched the damp receiver with everybody trying to get as close together as possible. None of us knew what was going to happen next until that voice said,
"Stick it in. Your credit card number, that is."
I couldn't stick it in. I didn't have a credit card. And none of my friends did either. They gave up, moved on. But not me. I wanted to understand this world I couldn't access. I wanted to experience it. When I grew up, I decided to become a sex worker. For 15 years, I worked in dungeons, I talked dirty on cam, I directed queer porn, and performed in live sex shows. After making fantasy my career, I am not easily shocked. But I am still curious. These days, I'm a full-time writer. I have a podcast where I interview fetish experts, and I write stories about the sex industry. But I never got to experience that world I heard on the other end of the phone line. I've always wanted to know what it was like in the era before my time. An era defined by a version of sex that was just before the internet changed how we consume porn forever. What was this world? Who would I have talked to if I'd had a credit card? And where did it all go? This is an 8-episode series that will take you inside the tight-knit, dysfunctional group of people who were behind the majority of phone sex calls made in America throughout the 1990s. It's the story of a meteoric rise and dramatic fall, of innovation and Shakespearean-level backstabbing, and fortunes built on the hard work of men and women, especially the women, who never got the credit or respect they deserved. This is the first episode. Press one now.
Hey, baby. Is this your first time? Don't be scared. We are gonna rock your world. Just press one now.
The story of the phone sex industry starts with therapy and a guy named Richard.
I was never looking for glory or fame, so.
FYI, Richard isn't his real name. Back in the early 80s, during the beginnings of the 900 number craze, Richard thought to himself, I bet people would pay for therapy over the phone. It would be remote, totally private. He figured it could help people who were bedridden or folks who lived in small towns and didn't want to run into their therapist at the bank.
So I had a guy who I knew who's a therapist, convinced him to come work for me. And I put an ad in New York Magazine, therapy over the phone. And the phone started ringing off the hook.
The therapist would answer and...
And he would hang up the phone and I'd say, what was it? What happened? And he'd say, they wanted a girl. They wanted a girl with big breasts. They wanted a girl. So I said, yeah, hey. They want a girl, we'll get them a girl.
And that's how for-profit phone sex started. Richard ditched the shrink and hired women who were prepared to listen to men's problems while also vividly describing how big their breasts were over and over again. These women played the part of the therapist and the storyteller.
A warm, fun, understanding friend.
So, Richard bought advertising space in New York Magazine, Hustler and The Village Voice, and TV commercials on Howard Stern. The calls kept rolling in. Pretty soon there were copycats doing the same thing Richard was doing, selling phone sex. But there was more than enough business to go around. It seemed like he'd struck gold.
Call now.
Call now.
Call now.
But there was a problem. Billing. Some callers paid with a credit card, which was all good. Visa or Amex would just send Richard a check. But some calls were charged to people's phone bills, and Richard needed a middle company to get paid.
There was a phone company called Telesphere, and they were doing the 900 billing, and they were a public company. And I was doing a lot of business. I mean, a lot of business. Millions. And they declared bankruptcy.
He had no way to collect his money.
I was looking for some way to turn that billing into cash. And somebody I knew had mentioned they know this guy, Mike Pardes, and he may be able to do it.
Enter Mike Pardes, the man who would revolutionize the phone sex industry.
Hello, I'm here. Good morning and greetings. Mike Pardes here. Hi.
If you met Mike Pardes when I did, you'd probably describe him as a real character.
My life started off in the streets of Brooklyn, New York. I was smart. I was a tough Jewish kid.
Even though he had dyslexia, he earned an accounting degree from NYU. In his 20s, he had a colorful run as a businessman before settling into the telecommunications industry. When Pardes heard about guys like Richard, he saw an opportunity, and he saw dollar signs.
He's a very, very, very bright guy and super motivated. You know, you got to give Mike credit. Mike could have been the CEO of General Motors.
When we met Pardes, he was welcoming, self-assured, and macho. He'd schmooze everyone and strut around town in his daily uniform, a white tank top and very thin cotton workout shorts. Maybe some of that swagger was because Pardes had been rich for a long time. Even before he got into phone sex, Pardes had sold a prior telecommunications business to the tune of $8 million. He could have retired whenever he wanted. But then, in 1989, he got a call from his lawyer, Joe.
And he said to me, Mike, you ought to get into the paper call business. I says, what's paper call? He says, you know, you give information on the phone, and then you charge the people by the minute. I says, really? He says, yeah, you know, like horoscope, sports lines, and sex. I says, wait a minute, Joe, did you say sex? He said, yeah. I said, wow.
Pardes wanted in, but he wasn't going to do what everybody else was doing.
I said, oh my God, I said, I got big ideas. We could really blow this thing up.
This wasn't Mike Pardes's first foray into the world of business and pleasure. In fact, Pardes got his first taste of sex work when he was barely an adult. It was the summer of 1961. Pardes was just an 18-year-old kid. He got a job at a resort in the Catskills where wealthy New Yorkers went to get some fresh air for the summer season. Picture Dirty Dancing with Pardes on staff in the Patrick Swayze role, although he looked more like a young Paul Newman, trim and blonde with a lot of charisma.
And here I am, a waiter. I don't know shit about anything except, you know, you bring the food out.
One day, Mike's boss told him that after he was finished waiting on dinner tables, he was also expected to dance with the guests, specifically the married women vacationing by themselves, their kids away at summer camp, their husbands back home in the city.
So what happens there is that I'm walking around during the week and after the boss said what he had to say, and now the woman goes to me, let me have your pocket, and she puts a note in my pocket. This is her room number. This is her name. She says, come see me later.
Pardes did as he was told.
And they took advantage of things. They wanted to be with a young guy. Here I am, 18, 19 years old. These women are in their 30s, and they got me, a young stud.
According to Pardes, the husbands knew exactly what their wives were up to.
Get a load of this. When all the husbands came back mid-season, they gave me a nickname. I became the fur trapper of the mountains. And what did that mean? I caught more fur than anybody else.
You can probably tell Pardes is very proud of this era of his life.
When the summer was over, I was a beast. I was so well trained.
But it also took an unexpected toll on him.
What I just told you about the women, the married women, that didn't turn me on at all. It was just a physical orgasm. Certainly, it made me feel like I was used, abused, a toy, and I was being passed around. And, you know, other than the fact that I had my orgasm, everything else was disgusting.
Would you say that you were doing sex work?
That's probably a good label because that's what it was all about. No kissy, no huggy, just, you know, do some prancing, dancing, pose, this and that.
So at 18, Pardes saw firsthand what can happen when sex and money get tangled up, how it can be both thrilling and impersonal. Throughout his life, he would be on all sides of this transaction, as the customer paying for sex and as the boss in charge of selling sex.
The human race and seeing how perverse they were and... everybody's a freak. So therefore, me, I'm just the organizer. I'm just the processor.
This philosophy guided Pardes throughout his early career. He got a job as a broker.
I became, if you will, the Babe of Wall Street, not the wolf. But this was early on. And so my daytime activity was I was a Wall Street tycoon, I thought. And at nighttime, I was a flamboyant disco operator.
That's right. Pardes got into the New York City nightlife business. This was 1971, just as disco was going mainstream. He opened a nightclub called, wait for it, the Operation Club. He ran the Operation Club with the help of his first wife and neighborhood sweetheart, Ronnie.
I loved Mike very, very much. I still care about him, too. I told you, we were soulmates.
Ronnie helped Pardes create a plexiglass floor that changed colors with the music. And this venture made the young couple a new set of friends.
I had met the Italian mob, Fat Tony. He liked me, I liked him. And he said, hey, Mike, I want you to run a couple of gay clubs we got in Manhattan. I like the way, you know, you manage this one.
So Pardes ran an after-hours gay bar, and he and Ronnie almost opened up a swingers club, too.
I did it for him. Not for myself.
The New York nightlife was, got up at 10 o'clock at night, went out to a restaurant in Manhattan to eat. Then we'd bounce around to a few clubs and hang, dance, what have you. Then it came to a point, we're doing drugs, and I'd say to Ronnie, hey, you see that girl over there? I said, what do you think? Okay, I'm going to invite her to come home.
Not surprisingly, Pardes developed quite the cocaine habit. Eventually, the partying and running with the mafia caught up with him. He got involved in a convoluted scheme helping his mob friends cash some stolen bonds. That landed him in jail at Rikers for about 9 months.
Thought I would die. I was so devastated. Here I have a kid. She was 8 years old at the time.
With her husband behind bars, Ronnie packed up, took their daughter Jill, and moved in with her parents, who had recently retired to the Sunshine State.
It was horrible. I had to move to Florida.
That was the sword of Damocles that fell over me, and I said, you know, I got to change my life. I got to get the fuck out of here. I'll do my time, but I can't stay in New York. Otherwise, I'm a dead pigeon.
It was too late to save his marriage. Pardes's self-indulgent behavior cost him his family. But he did get a fresh start in South Florida. He found success with one telecommunications business, and he could have stopped there. But stopping is not Mike Pardes's style. So when his lawyer, Joe, called him and suggested he get into the phone sex business, Pardes lit up. But he wasn't going to do what everybody else was doing. He'd take everything he'd learned in the Catskills, the time he calls his sexual education, and bring it together with everything he learned from the New York nightlife scene. Mix in his recent business success and voila.
And I said this to myself, I will build the largest service bureau in phone sex.
Your credit card number then.
For Pardes, there was absolutely nothing wrong with this new line of business.
It was truly about having a relationship with people that called, that they spoke to a friend. Whatever the fantasy was, my operators knew how to talk with people to make them feel the enjoyment that they called for, that they're paying for.
It was just an ordinary business, and he was a typical CEO. But for almost everyone else involved at ATN, whether they were Pardes's business partners or operators on the line, they would constantly feel the powerful stigma of being involved in the business of sex, a stigma that lurked below the surface and was always threatening ATN's very existence.
This is your last chance to save 65% on a full year of BODi. I'm Carl, co-founder of BODi. That's B-O-D-I. And I want to help you lean into your decision to start working out and eating better. Right now, if you sign up for a one-year subscription to BODi, I'll give you 65% off. Look, I know it's not easy to get fit and lose weight, especially if you're trying to figure it out by yourself. But we make it simple. Just follow a program for 20 to 30 minutes day by day and lose 5 to 10 pounds a month. We have over 120 programs that have been tested and proven to work, and almost 300,000 five-star reviews in the App Store to prove it. BODi also has complete eating plans and thousands of healthy, delicious recipes. So stop guessing and start seeing results with BODi. And let me give you 65% off right now so you save big on the app that CNN underscored named Best Fitness App. But the sale ends this week, so don't wait. Sign up for a year of BODi and save 65%. Just go to BODi.com. That's B-O-D-I with an I.com.
With everyone fighting for attention, how can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy. Get Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketing platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results fast. Constant Contact makes it easy to promote your business with powerful tools like email and SMS marketing, social media posting, and even events management. Don't know much about marketing? No sweat. Constant Contact's writing assistance tools and automation features help you say the right thing at the right time, every time. Tackle any challenge with Constant Contact's expert live customer support. Plus, everything's backed by their 30-day money-back guarantee. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact. Helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
A paper call business, or dial-a-porn as it became known in the 90s, started with phone numbers. Numbers like
1-800-US-PUSSY, 1-800-300-CUM, C-U-M-M, 1-900-HOT-DUCK.
A hot duck also spells hot fuck on an old telephone, by the way. So you'd get these different kinds of vanity numbers, 800 lines and 900 lines. A lot of people don't think about how much work goes into running a company in the sex industry. They think of it as something that just springs up spontaneously, like a weed. But you'd have to advertise those numbers. You'd have to arrange billing deals with other companies. You'd have to employ operators. And you'd have to have the technology that connected the calls to the right operator. The Pardes innovation was this. He'd start a service bureau. He'd do all the back-end work, hire the operators, build the tech, process the billing. And all his clients had to do was buy 1-900-HOT-TITS and advertise it. At the end of the month, the client would receive a check from Pardes. Basically, Pardes would take all the different jobs and bring them under one roof. So he rented an office in a strip mall in Aventura, Florida, a suburb north of Miami, surrounded by doctor's offices and freeway on-ramps. And with that, he was officially in the phone sex business. Now, when somebody called 1-900-HOT-TITS, they would hear someone like Alicia.
I saw an ad in the paper when I was shopping in Publix saying that they are looking for phone actresses.
In 1993, Alicia was pregnant, and the plan was that her husband was going to support the family. But she kept that ad she found in the grocery store.
So I put it away. Just a premonition. My husband suffered an accident and he went into a coma. And my life went upside down, having a 15-month-old baby. And, you know, I would have to take control and go to work. And all everything was, I didn't want to give the baby to anyone to take care of. And I said, oh, I have that paper that I kept in my little cigarette case. So I pulled it out and I called. Little did I know that was going to be my career for a while.
Alicia started working as an operator for American Telnet.
I earned enough money that I would have someone come in, clean my house, and keep the baby from 1 to 5 while I slept, okay? I had my paycheck every 2 weeks. I had paid vacation. I have health care. It was a legit job.
It was a legit job because sex work is work, full stop. But it's always been unusual for any part of the sex industry to offer what ATN provided for Alicia and the other operators, a paycheck, healthcare, paid time off. It was legal and it was stable.
The best part of a fantasy is someone special to share it with. Don't you agree?
In the 80s and 90s, paper call lines were a pop culture frontier. They were a new way to make money, and not just sex lines. There was New Kids on the Block.
Push 1 if you'd like to listen in on the New Kids on the Block talking.
Wrestling.
Catch the gorgeous ladies of wrestling at a new
Numbers for Kids.
Ho, ho, ho! Fancy here!
Numbers for pretty much anything.
Yo, what's up? We're in WA.
And we got our own ruthless hotline.
Freddy Krueger has a special message just for you.
Call me now for your free reading.
Yeah, remember Miss Cleo? That was one of ATN's numbers. These 900 numbers saturated American culture. They were huge. They were parodied on The Simpsons and SNL, and they were referenced in a great American anthem.
So ladies, if the butt is round and you want a triple X throwdown, dial 1-900-MIX-A-LOT and kick them nasty thoughts. Baby got back.
Not surprisingly, it was the phone sex numbers that quickly became the most popular. Calling these numbers was affordable, accessible, and relatively safe. This was the first time a middle-class staple like the landline could facilitate a one-on-one or two-on-one adult service from the comfort of your home. No driving around seedy areas to get to a porn theater or sneaking to that back room at the local video store. Also, it was interactive. Remember the ads I loved? A real, live girl.
The routine was, I'm going to say what I look like. You say what you look like. What do you like? I would have a vibrator because they would hear the vibrator. Oh, yes, I'm using the vibrator on me. Oh, yeah, it feels so good. Oh, yeah. And you wouldn't believe the kind of fetishes. There was one that he just wanted to hear me laugh because I would be like, ha, 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 ha. Oh, yeah. Just laughing like that for an hour. Okay, they would want to hear you farting. Okay, how am I gonna fart? Do you know, I would be going like, All right, so how would you like it? You want me to straddle you and you can feel all that warm goozy going down? Oh, my God.
To offer Dirty Talk on this kind of scale, Mike Pardes realized he needed cutting-edge technology, which led him to a nondescript strip mall on the outskirts of Miami. On a sunny day in 1990, Mike Pardes was driving his white Jaguar SJ12 convertible. He was dressed in designer jeans, t-shirt, Italian leather shoes. Big day for him.
There was no doubt in my mind that American Telnet could grow diabolically.
He'd been asking around the telecommunications biz, trying to find the perfect person who could help him build the technology he needed. And he'd heard about this young guy who might be able to do just that. Pardes parked, got out of the Jag, and walked into a computer supply store to meet Michael Self. Pardes's first impression of Self wasn't exactly the most flattering.
He's 24 years old. He's about 6'2". I'm looking at him. And I said, oh, hi, Michael. And he goes, greetings. And I said, oh, God, I got a real computer nerd. He looked like the nerd of nerds. Glasses, verschumbled. That means he wasn't dressed properly. And he was nerdy.
But Pardes was fine with this. He needed a nerd. Michael Self had his own first impression of Pardes.
He was thin, very in shape, always has been. He had aviator-type glasses that he wore. He steps into a handshake, extends his hand. He will extend his head a little bit, too. Puts himself into his greeting.
Self's store was mostly empty because he didn't have money to fill it with equipment. The walls were submarine gray, and for art, they had empty software boxes hung on the walls. But Pardes wasn't deterred.
And we talked about pricing of equipment and software and everything, and I told him what it would cost. And he said, there's no room for movement.
Self hadn't gone to college. He'd barely finished high school. But he knew what his talents were worth. He knew he had the skills to build all the hardware and software that Pardes's company would need. And if they needed tech that didn't exist, he knew he could invent it.
And so he said, I can build them. The price is $20,000 a computer. I says, how about $18,000?
I said, no, the price is the price.
Pardes countered. He'd go to somebody else, but Self wasn't worried.
You can get a doctor, or if you have a problem in your brain, you're going to go see a neurosurgeon. So a neurosurgeon is to a doctor what I am to programmers.
Self was young, but he wasn't completely naive. He had already been hit up by other 900 companies to develop this kind of technology before.
I later came to find out that it was for a phone sex line. That was my first time. I was like, oh, shit. Really? Porn?
Self wasn't thrilled at the prospect of being back in the porn business, and he knew his skills were in high demand. He wasn't about to offer a discount. So Pardes went off and tried to find a budget neurosurgeon. 2 weeks later.
And then came back to me and called me and said, okay, let's do it.
As you know, I gave him the label of the Bill Gates of the phone sex business.
Now, if this is a startup story, these were their garage days. Self's office had no windows and what he calls god-awful 70s wood paneling on all the walls. The computer room had, quote, icky fluorescent lighting, no life whatsoever. And in these two rooms, the 24-year-old Self would do it all.
When the company first started, I was the sole technology source. I did everything myself. I would go from soldering cables to writing the programs, answer the phones, writing the software that did the fraud control. So stringing cables through the ceiling down a 200-foot hallway, pulling it down the wire at the other end, sleeping there or even just working through the night and being a zombie the next morning, catching a second wind, keep on going. Easily 80-hour work weeks, nonstop.
Mike Pardes likes to paint a rosy picture of American Telnet. When the producers and I were driving around his beloved South Florida with him, he told us all the benefits that ATN had provided over the years.
I was providing a good and valuable service. I wasn't a smut lord. I wasn't a pimp. And as I say, probably stop the spread of AIDS because people aren't doing that. Stop the spread of rape. Reduce the rate of divorce.
Always the salesman, right? Needless to say, the reality is a lot more complicated.
I always felt at the time it was such a shame that what we were doing is for the sex industry. I was embarrassed to tell people what I did.
There were occasions where other departments would visit the operator services, and it was more like a field trip, you know, going to the zoo and just kind of looking through the glass and that type of thing.
Somebody running into my office and saying, hey, Dateline's here. They're like, oh, fuck.
Investigation into the phone sex business led us to this company again and again, American Telnet.
And they would be like, okay, do this one. Now do that one. Now do a preamble for this one.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, kind of like the freak show at the carnival.
He's just taking one of the daggers out that I just put in his back, and he put it in my front.
I said, you consider this to be the worst decision you've made in your life so far. Don't make any more like this.
That's on this season of Operator.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Operator ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
From Topic Studios and Wondery, this is episode 1 of 8 of Operator, a story about sex, work, and power. Operator was written by Michael Connors and me, Tina Horn. The series was created by Daryl Freimark and Michael Connors and produced by Daryl Freimark and Michael Gottwald. Our coordinating producer is Grant Irving. Our editor is Chloe Persinos. Additional editing by Lizzie Jacobs. This episode was produced by Pallavi Katamasu with help from Phoebe Wang, Sam Rydell, and Aaron Grace Kelly. Associate producer is Emily Jample. Additional production support by Daniel Gonzalez and Fiona Pestana. Our engineers are Sam Baer, Sergio Enriquez, and Andrew Law. Music is by Nolan Schneider with additional original music by Minivan. Our theme is by Kat Leon. Sound design, scoring, and mix is by Jeff Schmidt. And a special thanks to Jeff Greenberg. This series is produced by Topic Studios, Hardball Entertainment, 5x8 Productions, the Department of Motion Pictures, and Wondery. Executive producers are Daryl Freimark, Michael Connors, Michael Gottwald, and Chloe Persinos. Executive producers are Maria Zuckerman, Christy Gressman, Lisa Leingang, and Lital Malad for Topic Studios. Aaron O'Flaherty, Marshall Louis, and Jen Sargent are the executive producers for Wondery.
It's all a lighthearted nightmare on our podcast, Morbid.
We're your hosts. I'm Alina Urquhart.
And I'm Ash Kelly.
And our show is part true crime, part spooky, and part comedy.
The stories we cover are well-researched.
He claimed and confessed to officially killing up to 28 people.
With a touch of humor.
I'd just like to go ahead and say that if there's no band called Malevolent Deity,
that is pretty great.
A dash of sarcasm and just garnished a bit with a little bit of cursing.
This motherfucker lied.
Like a liar.
And if you're a weirdo like us and love to cozy up to a creepy tale of the paranormal,
or you love to hop in the Wayback Machine and dissect the details of some of history's most notorious crimes,
you should tune in to our podcast, Morbid. Follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to episodes early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.